From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm David Watts Barton. The recent discovery of hundreds of bones of murder victims has opened up an old case as well as old wounds for a lot of people in this area as they wait to hear if their loved ones are among the victims discovered near Linden in Calaveras County. My guests are painfully and intimately familiar with the case, which was reopened after a reporter for the Stockton Record convinced serial killer Wesley Shermantine to give up the location of some of the bodies. That reporter is Scott Smith, and he is in here in our studio. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Also with us is Jeffrey Reinick, who worked on the 1999 Yosemite murders and other high-profile cases, and he took on this case as a private citizen. Welcome also.
Thank you.
For those of us who are not following the case, let's start lay out how we got here. Scott Smith, what are the contours of the case?
Well, this obviously started long before I came on the scene, but basically Wesley Shermantine and his boyhood friend, Lauren Herzog, were arrested in 1999 and subsequently convicted of Shermantine received guilty verdicts for four murders. And Lauren Herzog was convicted of three of those murders. Shermantine was sentenced to death and where he remains on death row at San Quentin State Prison. Lauren Herzog was found guilty of the three murders and given a 78 years to life sentence, which was subsequently overturned on appeal, and he paroled in 2010. I started working on this as a courts reporter, a prisons reporter for the Stockton Record, and back in 2006, I sent Shermantine a letter and other gentlemen from San Joaquin County who are on death row, and I said, you know, let's talk. Let's see where this goes. And one of those folks who responded was Shermantine, and here we are today.
And you said that Herzog was paroled, which might surprise people that somebody who was responsible had been convicted of three murders would be paroled. How did that happen?
Yeah, again, his original sentence was 78 years to life. That was overturned on appeal. The appellate court found that investigators violated his rights while he was making confession and incriminating Shermantine and himself. He said, well, maybe I should talk to my attorney. And the court later found that that was anything he said thereafter was inadmissible. So they ended up making a deal where he pled guilty to voluntary manslaughter for Cindy Vanderheiden's death, and he got a sentence of 14 years, which made him eligible for parole.
And so he was paroled to Lassen County, to Susanville. And then when all this this case started being reopened in, I guess this was in January, just last month.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I had been corresponding with Shermantine and had visited him a couple times on death row. And he, you know, throughout the years made different offers. He wanted, you know, say $10,000 to give up the information where the bodies were and, you know, an outdate to get out of prison. And I said, well, you know, we don't buy stories. That's just not how it works. And even if we did, I don't have $10,000, which is what he was demanding. Sometime middle of last year, sort of out of the blue, I get a phone call from Sacramento bounty hunter Leonard Padilla, who has been with this case for years, part of the searches back when. And I tell him the situation. He says, yeah, tell him he's got it, anything he wants. I got it. So in December, I got a letter with a map on it, with an X marking the spot where he said Chevy Wheeler was buried in 1985. He says he buried her. He maintains he didn't do any of these crimes. He blames it all on Herzog. And Herzog blamed it all on Shermantine. So it's one of those.
But you burying her would be bad enough as it is.
Yeah, certainly.
And this was the Wheeler's, the Chevy Wheeler's, the bones that were just discovered, what, yesterday, I guess, or just confirmed Friday and then.
Yeah,
the
what happened was searches go on. And just last Thursday, the first major breakthrough came when they discovered the place where Shermantine had discarded Cindy Vanderheiden back in 1998. Following day, Friday, then they go just a short distance away in Calaveras County on the property where Shermantine's father had built a large castle-like home. And second day, they find Chevy Wheeler, excuse me. Following that up on Saturday, they find out in Linden, where they're continuing to dig right now, they find a well with human remains in it. They excavated that well and went down to 45 feet, and they've started coming up with bones.
And was that also marked on a map that Shermantine sent you? Yeah. Or was that an extension of the investigation?
Early in our correspondence, mid-last year, he had asked for aerial maps of this whole region. It's a big ranch land, rolling hills east of San Joaquin County, in eastern San Joaquin County. He never specifically told me where that well was, or that well was the what he calls Lauren's Boneyard. So I'm honestly not sure where investigators got that information. Maybe Jeff can enlighten us there.
Okay. And also, when we say well, this is a well that had been dug a long time ago and an unimproved well.
Yeah. So it's an old well. They believe it was dug back in the 1800s, the 19th century well. Picture, for lack of a better example, the little house on the prairie. You drop a bucket down. And it had been abandoned, long abandoned. And the property owner who now owns that property bought it in 1982 and a few years after that, covered it over, filled it in, and capped it off with cement. So it's
not knowing what was down there.
Clearly,
obviously.
Clearly.
Jeffrey Reinick, you're a 30-year veteran of the FBI, but you got involved in this case as a private citizen?
Yes, I did. I received a call in the middle of December from the FBI office here in Sacramento. It apparently Leonard had been calling in to the FBI wanting to share this information with them, and they knew that I had had a history of working with Leonard and asked if I would talk to Leonard and work with him on this. So at that point, I contacted Leonard per their request, and Leonard shared with me the background that Scott had just told you. Mm-hmm. Leonard had been at the Calaveras site, the Shermantine's old property, digging as the map had directed, and had apparently Leonard said that the Calaveras County Sheriff's Department had gotten a search warrant, and he was with them when they went on the property and dug and found nothing. The result of which they ended that dig. Leonard was forbidden to come back to that property. Leonard told me—
Forbidden by—
By the property owner.
Okay.
Apparently, and I've been in contact with the property owner, there was damage to his property. I've been told that the backhoe they were using to dig broke during the effort. And as a result, the land was left in a damaged condition. And the property owner felt this was unfair to him. And I agree with him. I think it is unfair. I don't know if his property's been repaired, but I would certainly hope that they're considering it. But after that, Leonard was forbidden to come back to the property by the property owner.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard, when he had contact with me, wanted me to vouch for him so he could get back on the property and dig.
Mm-hmm.
I advised Leonard I wouldn't do that. But I did offer to Leonard that I was aware that these representations from Shermantine concerning the location of the victims had been going on for years. And what that meant to me was the emotional torture of the victims' families had been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
So I offered to Leonard that if he allowed me to move forward and do things my way and stop getting in the media, stop doing the digging, mm-hmm. things like that, I would try and figure out a way that we could get some final answer for the victims' families. I couldn't guarantee it would provide a victim, but my goal was to end their years of emotional suffering. And Leonard agreed and let me move forward.
We're speaking about the recent unearthing of bodies down in Calaveras County with two men who were very intimately involved in all this. What was Leonard Padilla's motivation, Jeff, in getting involved in this, because he spent a lot of money, right? How much money, Scott? How much money did he give?
He's agreed to give Mr. Shermantine up to $33,000. I don't think that has been made yet, because frankly, the remains that have been found have not been confirmed. He's waiting for 100% confirmation. So, Leonard is a flamboyant, egotistical guy. He does not deny that. He likes the media. He likes being on television. He likes talking about cases. So he says, initially when he told me he had the money, he's like, yeah, Scott, I have a big ego. It needs to be fed. Mm-hmm. But he's also a father. I think he has five children, and he has a heart. And I believe that he also has the best interests of the mm-hmm. relatives at hand here.
Jeffrey Ryan.
Well, I'd like to share. Leonard, I'm sure, is listening to this. So I'm saying this to Leonard. but Leonard is a media hound. He's addicted to media. He got involved with media at the Casey Anthony thing, and you know he loves the media. But as Scott said, and I agree with Scott, he's a father. He's at heart, I believe, a good person. And for me, I first learned about that in 1992 when here in Sacramento, we had a 7-month-old baby taken in an armed home invasion. Mm-hmm. The Sacramento Police Department was working it. The FBI was working it with them. And a few days into this, Leonard started calling and saying he had information about who had taken this child. And Leonard's information ended up being the solution to the case. And as a result of Leonard's information, we recovered that baby. The Sacramento Police Department and the FBI working together jointly recovered this 7-month-old baby. Mm-hmm. And it was remarkable. And we took this child to the UC Davis emergency, and he was being checked over. And while I was standing there with Greg Stewart, the detective, I get this nurse tugging at me saying, hey, there's this guy outside wearing black with a big black hat who wants to come in. And so I went out and I saw it was Leonard, and I brought him in. And Leonard will be embarrassed for me to say this, but he was emotional. He was you know, sobbing, as we all were, to have been part of such a great effort to do something so great.
And this is something that troubles some people, I think, is that these cases are so painful to find out about. You and I talked earlier before the show. You got very emotional about this. What is your motivation for getting back involved in a case like this?
Well,
because the deed has been done. A lot of people have died.
Myself and the people I work with at the FBI and the people I've worked with in local law enforcement, what drives us is that goal to try and bring some type of answer to the victims' families, to put some understanding or give them the ability to try and have some meaning in their loss. Mm-hmm. If a victim dies and the family realizes that someone down the line was saved because of that death, then it puts a little bit of value. It doesn't end the hurt. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it go away, but it gives them the ability to try and take something from it. And those I work with, and Leonard and Scott sitting here, because we were talking about it before we came on, it's an addictive thing to be able to do such a thing for victim families, to take them out of that abyss of sorrow and try and give them the tools they need to move on. That's what I'm addicted to.
Scott, we're talking about earlier. We were talking about there were four murders that Sherman Time was convicted of.
Correct.
Three for Herzog. We should also mention that Herzog found out that Sherman Time was going to be giving some of this information away. He was about to be on parole, right?
Mm-hmm. Coming up. Yep.
And what happened?
What happened was, Leonard had made a phone call to Herzog. He'd been in, you know, periodic conversation with Herzog up north, and he called Herzog and said, you might want to get an attorney. I can help you with this. Shermantine is talking. He's giving up information. The next day we find out that Mr. Herzog has apparently hung himself and mm-hmm. killed himself.
Jeffrey?
I went to San Quentin on January 14th and interviewed Mr. Shermantine concerning locations of the victim's remains. And it was my belief, and those that were with me in that interview, that Mr. Shermantine was giving us detailed information that might show to be credible. In that interview, I told Mr. Shermantine I was aware of the pain and emotional anguish the victim families had been going through, and that my goal was to put him in a position where he would either show he could recover a victim or forever be silent and leave these people alone. Subsequent to the interview, when it was over, I told Leonard that I thought the interview had gone really well and that I felt we had information that would give us the ability to determine if Shermantine was in fact telling the truth. Mm-hmm. Leonard knows me well enough, and he knows me from the Yosemite case, to know that, you know, when I'm saying that to him, then I believe we made progress. I think he took it upon himself to call Herzog and dig at him. After he told Herzog, you know, I think it was a sense of anxiety for everyone. Here is this killer who's out on parole, about to be released. And I think Leonard wanted to make sure that he knew his days were numbered. And I think that from the belief in Leonard's voice of the information we had gained from Shermantine, that Mr. Herzog felt that his days were numbered and decided to be in control of that number.
two other things fairly quickly. There are four. He was convicted of four murders, but we don't know how many people were actually murdered by these two guys, right?
We don't know. They were initially charged with more than that, and through the process, convicted of the four. But prosecutors, everybody involved in this case who knows anything, you know, believes that there could be up to 20. Who knows? Some of the victims who were murdered were left where they died, so those bodies were recovered. You know, and some of them weren't. So who knows? The number, it really is anybody's guess at this point.
And fairly far flung, too, right? We're talking about Western United States.
And right. And we cannot limit the offenders to just be Shermantine and Herzog. We don't know what others in the area have done, even their own families, possibly. So the victims they're recovering may not be victims. There's other wells that need to be addressed. And I know Leonard believes that the well they're digging now is the wrong well.
Wait, you said the victims may not be victims.
Well, for instance, there's a lot of times where people start excavating or even going into wells, they find remains of Native Americans. You know, this is an area where has a lot of rich tradition and history.
Okay.
We don't know whether these are victims of Herzog or Shermantine or whether they could be victims, you know, just like the well was started in the 19th century. We don't know who could be down that well.
Uh-huh. And this raises one last question, which is there has been a lot of controversy about the way that these excavations have been done. The sheriff in San Joaquin County?
Yes, sir.
What are some of the problems with that?
From the pictures I've seen on the internet and from what I've been told, and I have gotten a lot of calls from people on scene, the search is defined by the use of a large backhoe bucket being placed into the well and bringing out the victim's remains. In my experience, this is exactly the wrong way to do it. It's barbarous to me. It's the analogy of a guy standing with a smartphone but choosing to communicate with two tin cans and a piece of string. Mm-hmm. When that bucket goes down, it's going down through layers of victims. It's intermingling the victims. It's breaking bones. It's dislodging teeth from skulls. It is desecrating the sanctity of these victims and not permitting experts to go down and recover these victims so that maybe their personal effects could identify them.
And why is the sheriff doing it this way?
I think you'll have to ask him that.
I think it's such an extraordinary situation. I don't think that we've seen anything of the like in San Joaquin County before. So maybe this is
This is a sheriff that you've covered before, you've worked with?
I've spoken to the sheriff plenty of times, yeah.
And have you asked him about why they're doing it this way?
This is an emergency.
He also shut down the scene for a while, right?
He did when Mr. Reinick was involved in this attempt to bring Shermantine off of death row to point out some of the burial places. Sheriff Moore intervened and put a stop to that, and then they subsequently found some of the remains.
Okay, well, we're going to have to wrap it up there. It's obviously an ongoing story, is going to be in the news for quite a while, and we really don't know how it's going to end. But Jeffrey Reinex, thanks so much for joining
us. Thanks for having
me. And Scott Smith, thank you.
Thank you, David.
All right. This is Inside on Capital Public Radio. We'll be right back with Storm Large.